This week, as I prayed and prayed and prayed and wrestled with the message, I had about four different subjects that I kept dancing around. And my mind kept coming back to this subject, and I said, Lord, I just did that here. And then it kept coming back and kept coming back. And I don't know, I mean, sometimes I wonder, how do I come up with a subject? How do I come up with a message? But what was interesting is when I went back and looked, it's been longer than I thought it was. Actually, I think it was 2019, actually. So I know I just preached it, but not here. So maybe that's where I was confused. But what I was going to say is, yesterday someone texted me and said, I'm praying for you, that God will give you direction. And I said, He's given me direction. The problem is GPS keeps buffering because I keep trying to get off that path. And when I quit trying to get off the path, the GPS quit buffering and I had peace. And so this morning I want to talk about integrity. And it's a subject that I believe is very important, not just for the believer. It is a subject that I think all of us, we do not like working with people who lack integrity. Doesn't matter who they are or what they are. Doesn't matter what our relationship is with them. When I work with someone that lacks integrity, I usually have a problem with my attitude. I mean, that's just the way it is. And then I have to watch my integrity because I respond wrong. But when I look at the scriptures and when I look at what we are called as believers, how we are called to live, and I see how much integrity is molded into the fabric of the scriptures, I believe that as Christians, it's a little different. Actually, it's a lot different. It's not just a little different. It's a lot different as Christians, how we live and what our integrity looks like. Why do we need integrity? And we're going to look at the story of Joseph again this morning. It's a story that I love, and there's a lot of lessons in the story of Joseph that can be pulled out. And this is only one of multiple lessons that Joseph's life gives us. And we're going to look at chapter 39. And we are going to look at a couple. This thing is not cooperating. Are you unplugged back there, Curtis? Okay. My notes are gone. I might be in trouble. Hang on here. All right, hang on. See why I don't like electronics? Close it and start over here. It was working fine this morning, so. All right, I'm not going to fight it. So, what? I guess we're going to forget that. How's that? There are three parts that I want to look at, and this morning we're only going to look at two. What is integrity? Why is integrity important? And how do we maintain integrity? It seems like in our world, in our culture, not our culture, but in it affects our culture here, but in our world, there are so many things that change what people believe is living with integrity. If you remember some years ago, there was a football player at University of South Carolina that got caught doing some things that he wasn't supposed to do, and he knew he was doing the wrong thing. And when the newspaper interviewed him, he admitted doing what he did. But then he had a whole line of baloney justifying why what he did wasn't wrong, even though he knew he broke the rules. In 2019, a man by the name of Jeffrey Epstein, who was facing multiple crimes, decided that rather than face the consequences, he would end it. And I believe that he created more consequences for himself by doing that, because I believe that God will still hold him accountable for what he did. The last one, then, is how do we maintain integrity? And that one is, this is a two-part message, so you will have to wait for that. But this morning we're going to look at the first two points: what is integrity and why is integrity important? In our world today, it seems like accusations doesn't matter if they're true. We have a First Amendment right to say whatever we want to say, whether it's true, whether it's not, whether it destroys people or whether it doesn't. Now, that's a constitutional amendment, supposedly. I don't believe that the founding fathers of our country intended for that part of the Constitution to be used like it is today. It is simply a tool today to destroy people. Unfortunately, that finds itself into the church. It finds itself into our lives. Some time ago, Phyllis and I sat and were with some friends who were sharing a story about something where someone was being accused of something, and it was just an accusation that was thrown out. And there were no victims. They couldn't produce a victim. They couldn't produce any evidence and couldn't produce any proof. But they were able to split a church by false accusation. And I believe that we as Christians, we as the church, need to be really careful in what we believe and what we pass on. Because the power to destroy people's reputation is at the tip of our tongue. And we must be careful with that. And I want to look at chapter 39. I'm going to read the whole chapter, and then we're going to look at some of the verses that I believe are key to Joseph's integrity. And then we'll look at some more of Joseph's life after this. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well-built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants were inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, come to bed with me. But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. Look, she said to them, this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, this is how your slave treated me. He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. So Joseph was sold into slavery at 17 years old. And there is, there seems to be about a 10-year period to this point, from when he was sold into slavery until this part of the story happened. So it appears that he worked for, or was Potiphar's slave for about 10 years. Then in Genesis 41, there was a 2-year period where after this, that he interpreted the dream, and 2 years after that. So there's a period here where they're not 100% sure, but it does appear that at 30 years old, he became the overseer of Egypt. So there's a spread here from about 10 to 13 years of age up to 30. So there's a long period of time that Joseph spent either as a slave or in prison. And in verses 2 and 3, it says, the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. So God blessed Potiphar for Joseph's sake. He didn't bless Potiphar for Potiphar's sake. He blessed him for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and in field. And then in verse 8, we see the story where Potiphar's wife tried to get Joseph to sin. In verse 8, he says, he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? One writer made this observation, and I'm not sure that it's not right, that when Potiphar came home and he got angry, one writer made the observation that he wasn't sure that Potiphar believed his wife. And there's a couple things that could be in Potiphar's anger. Number one, if Joseph goes to jail, guess what happens to his income? It might hurt. But he also, I believe, there's another part that comes in here, is that by law, Potiphar had every right to put Joseph to death. And he could have. But he chose not to for some reason. So there's the theory. That's a theory now. Don't take that as Dale said this. That is a theory. And I actually tend to lean that way simply because of Egyptian law and Egyptian law under that time, and the fact that Potiphar was a very powerful man in the government at that time. Joseph did the one thing that made him look guilty. He left his coat there. So the evidence was there that he had been there. But that was all the evidence he had, that they had. They don't really know how long a period, because Potiphar would be gone for long periods of time doing his work in the government. And he was the guys that work in the embassy, ambassador. They think he was an ambassador, so he may have been out of the country for long periods of time, and they really don't know how long it was from the time that this actually happened until Potiphar came home. But just think about this. Joseph was a slave. He was accused of rape. Potiphar was a man of much wealth and was an officer in Pharaoh's administration. Joseph just put everything on the line for what he knew was the only thing he could do. Somewhere Joseph had been taught, and somewhere Joseph had caught what it meant to do what was right. So he ends up in prison because of this. So we ask the question, how in the world is that part of God's plan? Couldn't God take him from Potiphar's house straight to the throne where he ended up? Yeah, he could have. But maybe there were some things in Joseph's life that needed a little bit of fine tuning. Think about this. Parents, I want you to think about this, because these are some things that we tend to maybe do unintentionally as parents. Joseph was the favorite. Most likely, he was spoiled. And there's a pretty good chance that he was arrogant and a little cocky. And if you read back into the story, it seems like there was a conflict between him and his brothers. And in fact, at one point, his dad even said, "What do you mean? You think we're going to bow down to you?" And that's exactly what happened. Maybe Joseph needed a little bit of trimming. Maybe that diamond needed a little bit of sanding. And I do believe that God allows some of these things to come into our lives for our good. In Jeremiah 18, verse 4, the writer says, "The vessel he was making of clay was spoiled in the potter's hand. And he reworked it into another vessel as it seemed good to the potter to do." I have a friend who is a potter, and I will go into the pottery room, actually as a client, and I go into the pottery room every now and then. I don't go in there as much as I used to because he has 30 snakes in there now. And I don't like snakes. I don't care if they're in a cage. I don't care where they are. I don't like them. But anyway, I will see vessels that he has made that are ready for the kiln. And I'll look at them and I'll think they look pretty decent. And the next time I come back, they're gone. And I'm like, "What happened to that?" "I broke it up. It was no good." I'm like, "What was wrong with it?" "I didn't like it." There was something about it that the potter didn't like. There was something about... I believe there was something in Joseph's life that God wanted to fine-tune him because he had a bigger plan for him. Job chapter 27, verses 1 through 6. Job is again, he is having a discussion with his friends, if you want to call them friends. And Job is speaking to them. And they just accused him of something. I don't know what it was. I didn't go back and really read deep into it. But they just accused him of not being who he wanted himself to be portrayed as. Job again took up his discourse and said, "As God lives, who has taken away my right? And the Almighty who has made my soul bitter?" God just took away everything I had. He took away, he stripped me of my children, he stripped me of my income, he stripped me of everything. And he's made my soul bitter. "As long as my breath is in me and the Spirit of God is in my nostrils, my lips will not speak falsehood and my tongue will not utter deceit. Far be it from me to say that you are right till I die. I will not put away my integrity from me. I will hold fast my righteousness and will not let it go. My heart does not reproach me for any of my days." Listen to the literal translation of what he said. "I will not, emphatically, I will not put away my integrity. I will," he makes a choice, "I will hold fast to my righteousness and I will not let it go." So Job makes three emphatic decisions right here. No matter what God does, no matter what God's going to do in the future, I'm going to trust him. I'm going to believe that God has my best in mind. Jump over to Job chapter 31, verses 5 through 8. "If I have walked with falsehood and my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed in a just balance and let God know my integrity." I believe that Joseph was not concerned about what Potiphar thought, what Potiphar's wife thought, or what anybody else thought. He was more concerned about what God thought than anything else. "If my step has turned aside from the way, and my heart has gone after my eyes, and if any spot has stuck to my hands, then let me sow and another eat, and let what grows for me be rooted out." Proverbs 14, verse 23 says, "The wicked is overthrown through his evil doing, but the righteous finds refuge in his death." Psalm 37, verse 37, "Mark the blameless and behold the upright, for there is a future for a man of peace." The New Living Translation, I like the way it translates that verse in Psalm 37. It says, "Take note of the one who has integrity. Observe the godly, for the one who promotes peace have a future." Pay attention to what they do. As believers, I believe that is something we must work hard to maintain. We're human. We make mistakes. We do things we wish we hadn't done. But when the world looks at us, can they take note of our integrity? Can they see us and observe who God is? Do they see one who promotes peace and has a future? Is my life something that I want someone else to pay attention to and follow? You know, when I think of Job, God set Job up. And I think it was a little unfair because I don't want God doing that to me. I really wonder how I would respond if I was in the same position as Job. When God comes to Job and he says, "Hey, have you considered my servant Job? There's nobody on this earth like him. He is a blameless and upright man. He fears God. He turns away from evil." And this was after Satan had wreaked havoc on his life. "He still holds fast his integrity. Although you incited me against him to destroy him without reason." Satan had absolutely no justifiable reason for what he did. And yet, God allowed it. Proverbs 13, verse 6. Righteousness guards the person of integrity, but wickedness overthrows the sinner. If you look at the story of Daniel, and we're not going to go there, but if you read in Daniel chapter 6, verses 1 through 5, they wanted to go after Daniel, and they looked at his life, and they said, you know what? There's only one way we're going to get him. We're going to go after the way that he trusts God. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy, neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, they said, we will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God. How would my life change if someone was trying to find fault with me, and the only way they could find fault with me is the way that I live my life with integrity? I heard something interesting recently. We're not going into politics here. But the new Speaker of the House, what I heard interesting by someone in the media who was just terrified that this man had become Speaker of the House, they said, well, the problem with him is that he is a righteous man and he's a believer. I'm like, what's wrong with that? I kind of like that. I kind of am okay with that. But you see, in our world, it's not okay. It's messed up. And we must maintain, we must work hard to do the right thing. So the next question then is, what is integrity? C.S. Lewis said, integrity is doing the right thing even when no one is watching. And this is an interesting picture of integrity. And I'm not a bologna eater. I eat some of it. But if you look at bologna, you look at it, and I don't know if they still have them. Maybe if you go to Walnut Creek Cheese, they still have these big tubes of bologna that they'll cut off what you want. They'll slice it for how thick you want it. The problem is, it doesn't matter where you cut that bologna, it's the same. There's no meat there. Same thing with hot dogs, Clint. There's no meat there. But it doesn't change. The consistency is the same. And I think it's a good picture of how we must live. That our consistency needs to be the same no matter where we're cut. Integrity is defined as adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, and honesty. Potiphar trusted Joseph because Joseph was a person of utmost integrity. So why is integrity important? Integrity builds trust. Integrity defines your character. And a person who lives with integrity can be depended on to do what they say they are going to do, no matter what the consequences. I'm going to move ahead here because I'm going to run out of time in a minute. 30 seconds, actually. Our life and our actions are open for everyone to see, and we do not have to worry about hiding anything when we listen and we live the way we should. When we have integrity, we gain the trust of our leaders, of our colleagues, and our team. We're dependable, and when we hold ourselves accountable for our actions, we become role models for others to follow. I don't know, I'll just say this. I've been on a couple different groups where there were things that needed to be done. And once or twice, there was someone in that team that you could not depend on because they were always changing their mind. They never were consistent. And you could never trust what they said because you'd leave a meeting and come back to a meeting again and they'd say, oh, I didn't say that. And you're like, well, it's right here in the minutes. No, I didn't say that. That's unhandy. I don't want to be seen as somebody like that. All of this directly impacts our success in life. People who live and work with integrity are more likely to be considered for promotions because integrity is a hallmark of ethical leadership. Organizations want leaders that they can trust, And when you demonstrate integrity, you show everyone that you can be trusted. Sometimes we will face things we do not understand. I believe, we don't read this in the life of Joseph, but I have a feeling Joseph wrestled with where he was and why he was there. I don't think Joseph was any different than you or I would be. He had done nothing wrong. In fact, he had done everything right. And yet, here he was. As Christians, we must understand that being men and women of integrity will not always make us popular. It will not always be the easy way, but it is always the right way. Sometimes I will make choices to make sure I stay on the road that God is leading me on. And it will not make sense, but I believe with all my heart that if I fail to set those stakes in the ground, I will fail when I am tested. I want to close with this. People with integrity are more concerned about their character than their reputation. Your reputation is merely who others think you are, but character is who you really are. Closing with Job 27, verse 5, Job's words, "I will not put away my integrity from me." And that's a challenge for us this week, for me. The things that I say, how do I portray them? The things that I do, how does it portray Christ? It's a challenge. It's a lifestyle. It's something that all of us will continually work on. I believe, I remember my brother's father-in-law, Harvey Yoder. If you know Harvey Yoder, every Sunday morning he would get up and he would say, "It's a struggle." Man was 80-some years old. "It's a struggle. I struggle." And I'm thinking, dude, you should be over the struggle. But he wasn't. Because it's a life. It is what Satan wants. He wants to destroy us, sometimes by our own actions. But I think the commitment that I will not put away my integrity from me is a lifelong pattern and habit that we must maintain. Reuben, do you have a song? 410 in the Faith and Praise, if you'll stand. Father, this morning we are grateful. And we're just grateful that we can be here this morning as a family, as a church family, as friends, as people who have the same goal. And that goal is to display Jesus to this world. God, it seems like it gets more and more complicated for us because the world just seems to get crazier and crazier. But most of all, God, help us to look at the examples of Joseph and of Daniel, of Job, many other men and women in the Scriptures who teach us that living our lives with integrity, living our lives to be an example, to display Christ in all that we do or say, is a joy. It's actually fun. It's not drudgery. It's not something that should be hard to do, but then our humanness jumps in there. So, Father, this morning I want to make the commitment to just continue over and over to examine my life, to examine my heart, and to examine the way that I live my life, and that it will display integrity, the character of Christ to the world. Father, this morning, I just pray a blessing on each one here and this next week. God, help us to do your will, to live, to pattern, and to follow you, to be an example to those that we work with, and to be an example to each other. We bless you, thank you, and help us this week to be re-energized and to live with integrity. In Jesus' name, amen.